Welcome to You Heard It Here, the only show on the internet that serves absolutely no purpose whatsoever.
All it does is kill a little bit of time for us, I think, right?
It does for us. I hope it's a little bit more entertaining to other people.
I hope it kills time for other people, too.
Yes.
I mean, it's pretty much a show to listen while you're driving to work.
That's true. I can't tell you the number of times I've said that people who listen to our shows generally say, God, where'd that time go? I completely lost an hour of my life.
And that's the whole point. You know, we live outside the D.C. metro area, so commuting and everything's a big thing. And, you know, it's good to waste people's time.
Yeah, it's a great way to consume some time. So what we talk about is what's going on in the world, what's going on in the country. What's going on in the studio.
It's just a matter of what's going on, what we feel like that day at that time.
Yeah, whatever interests us. And actually had a story that I didn't get to do last week that I'm going to do because it's still an entertaining story from last week. But before we do that, Phil, do you mind if I rant a little bit?
Ken, you know I love a good rant.
Okay, so I'm going to give a little background to the story. So my great-grandmother immigrated here from Austria.
Okay.
So she spoke German.
Yes.
And she came here, and I have very, very vague recollections of her speaking German, but mm-hmm. I know she did when I was really young in my grandmother's home. But she mainly spoke it just when she's like upset about something. She'd raft off a bunch of German. But other than that, she went to great lengths to at least learn English in a passable way. You know, she could...
Like most of my family, my great-grandmother's from Austria, too.
Mm-hmm.
And my step-grandmother's from Germany.
Yeah.
So,
well,
your
great-grandmother's Eva Braun. Come on.
No. That's family was from Austria.
Okay.
Step-grandmother might have been.
Okay. Yeah, so she wasn't, I wouldn't say, you could tell that English wasn't her first language. But she went to great lengths to learn it. And anytime we were, you know, for the most part, anytime we were conversing in the house, nobody had to translate for her what we were saying. She understood English well enough and spoke it okay. Not great, but okay. And she was constantly trying to get better at it and everything. And, you know, consequently, whenever we were around, she would speak English with us. And,
okay, and
occasionally we might have to correct her
about
something.
Which most immigrants did.
Right. It was very common sense because, you know, back then people did try to assimilate in the society and become Americans in every way.
Right.
And see, here's the thing. In America, our language is English. Our language isn't intended to be 15 different languages, even though we might come from places that spoke 15 different languages.
Exactly.
So I was out to dinner the other night, and I was in an Oriental restaurant.
Okay.
And
was that Foo King Chicken?
It is. We No Speak, I think, was that.
Okay, We Too Low.
We Too Low. And there were a bunch of tables around where we were sitting that were filled with, and I'm, you know, I don't know for sure, but I'm going to guess that, you know, there were some Koreans and there might have been some Chinese families in there. But the one thing that really stuck out to me is that there was all this chatter going on at the table and it was all in their native tongue. They weren't speaking English. And I thought, I don't think people try to assimilate anymore. I really don't think, I think people just want to hang on to their old culture. They don't assimilate. And the problem is that we help them not assimilate in this country now.
You know, I never felt that way till I moved here.
Okay.
I think where we are is so much different because there's so many more foreigners in the D.C. metro area.
Yes.
Percentage-wise compared to any place else. And you have so many foreign nationals that are coming over here to work for their government or represent companies and stuff. You know,
right.
I think you kind of get an unfair view of it.
Maybe.
you know, like in New York, while there still are people that in Chinatown, they do still speak Chinese, not Chinese, whatever, Mandarin. Mm-hmm. You know, Chinese is that actually a language.
Right.
Mandarin or the other one, which forgive me because I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in a public setting, in the specific areas here, mm-hmm. you just get it in so many different areas.
Right.
It's not isolated. Like in Little Italy, in New York, they used to speak Italian all the time.
Sure.
You know, now it's kind of died down. And I also think in those areas, in D.C., there's a lot of new immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one thing I've noticed is there's a lot of first-gen and second-gen.
Sure.
Immigrants here compared to where I'm from in New York, you know, you're like 6th gen, 7th gen.
Right.
You know.
No, I would definitely agree with that. That definitely.
So, but I agree. We do make it too easy for them
Well, here's the thing. When I was a kid, and I even know when Phil was a kid, you didn't go into a CVS per se and see the aisle names describing what's in the aisle in multiple languages. But now we have that around here.
Around here we have that.
Right.
But you don't have that in New York.
Well, okay. Well,
or Boston.
So, if it's limited to the nation's capital metro area, then this particular area should be an example of what not to do. We're helping people not assimilate because if we're going to put
in our capital city,
yeah. In fact, in the town that I live in the shopping centers around there, it is common to see on the restaurants just Korean,
yes,
words,
yes,
no English at all.
Well,
it's almost like
right.
saying, I don't want you other people to come in my restaurant because you're going to have no idea what my restaurant is.
Yeah.
It could be a dry cleaner for all I know unless I went up to the window and looked in. It just has some Korean letters on there. And like I said, the first time I walked into a drugstore and saw the aisle names were in multiple languages, in this particular case, it was here in Manassas where we do the show, and the aisle names were in Spanish and in English. And I thought, Why aren't we trying to encourage?
Because the
people?
Almighty dollar is more important to retailers
mm-hmm.
than the American dream.
Well, I can understand a retailer want to be able to reach, you know, the
right.
as many people as they want, but retailers always wanted to, and even in this area. I grew up in this area,
but I think before it was not acceptable. You know what I mean? Like
not acceptable. What?
Well, no, I can't even say that. I grew up in a town which had the largest Polish festival in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were down in what we called Polish Town, it was a little part of our hometown. It was called Polish Town. They spoke Polish. There were Polish newspapers for that part of town.
Mm-hmm.
There were the street signs were in Polish. Everything was Polish.
Okay.
You know, and I mean, that was my whole life. They said that was all the way back to the 40s and 30s, you know, 40s and 50s when those people came.
Yeah, and I can kind of understand it in like a Chinatown or a Little Italy and things like
well,
that.
Well, I think your town, and I don't want to whore out the name of your town because,
sure.
you know, stalkers.
Right.
But, you know, remember I used to do business with a web developer and a mm-hmm. graphic artist there.
Right.
And I thought then that it was turning into a little Korea town.
Right. And it was. I mean,
you know,
I don't hold anything against Koreans coming.
I mean, I love the Korean crack chicken there. I don't remember the real name of that right. place, but oh my God, that stuff's like crack.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't mind the fact that, you know, they move in, they pull their money together, they buy businesses, you know, more power to them. That is part of the American
dream.
Right,
that's
part
of the American dream.
I understand that, but it's the failure to assimilate that always took place when I grew up. I grew up in this area and people did assimilate when I was a kid. It's like nowadays people do not assimilate. I understand want to hang on to a little of your culture because I think that's part of what the whole American experience is. You know, we blend right. all these different cultures together, but we don't blend anymore. All we do is we have multiple cultures and they stay separate. You know, if you want to have your place, you go. You have like a Little Italy where you can go down there.
I walked out of a place in your hometown
mm-hmm.
about a year ago, maybe two, that I went, a friend and I were in your hometown picking something up, and the place with the Korean chicken was closed.
Yeah.
And we said, all right, well, there's another restaurant there. We walked in. They didn't speak any English. There was nothing in English in the place.
Right.
And we walked out, and I'm 300 pounds, and my friend's bigger than me.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, I mean, we're like feeding a village.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I want to tell you what
sometimes I take it like there's this one whole shopping center in the town where everything is in Korean on there. And I don't care if you want to put it in English and Korean. And there are a few.
I know the shopping center you're talking about.
Yep. And everything's in Korean. And to me, the message that sends me is we don't want your business because you have no idea what we are. So I guess the thing that frustrates me, and this just sort of came to me when I was sitting in the restaurant the other day. It's not like I haven't noticed this before, but I kept thinking nobody wants to assimilate into America. And are we eventually going to end up being a society of individual and separate cultures? We're no longer going to have the great melting pot of America. We're not melting anymore.
You know, it's funny you should bring that up. About an hour before you got to the studio, I was on a phone call with a friend of ours, Craig. Mm-hmm. And we were talking. He was talking to me about some stuff. Craig produces a magazine. And we were just talking about some stuff that was relevant to that. And we got into the topic of, you know, some of the politics and what's going on in this country and how things are changing and stuff. And I said to him, I said, I couldn't remember the Russian guy. And I was actually Googling that. There was that Russian philosopher who said that eventually America would end up being four separate countries.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. I mean, what I see going on, I think that's true. And I think part of the reason that's true is because you're going to have people group. And I think inside those countries, you're going to have separate little communities of different things. You know, you go to Detroit, you know, Arabic is commonly spoke there. Right. You go to parts of New York, Spanish, you know, New York City's always had the Chinatown and the Little Italy.
No, you think about the
Spanish
town,
Harlem.
You think about the town that we're doing the show in right now. I would say that Spanish is the predominant language here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hell, half the business we've done, if it hadn't been for the guy in the pizza shop next door translating, we wouldn't have done.
Right. Oh.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's sad.
I really do.
That we've hoarded ourselves out to think that it's more important that we accept them than they become more like us.
Yeah,
I feel like that's saying American culture is bad. Mm-hmm. Like we've convinced ourselves that we want to tell foreigners that come here that what we do is bad.
Right. You know, it makes me think about it. I went to Japan some years ago, and when I went there, yeah, they have you go to an American base over there, and everybody's speaking English, and that's all well and fine, and that's that little community there. But everybody that I knew that I worked with over there on that base went out in the community, went out of their way to learn enough Japanese that you could get around, do the things you need to do. Even I did,
yeah.
And I was only visiting, and learned that, and I communicated. Not so great, but I made an attempt at it in Japanese when I was over there. I wasn't trying to become part of their culture, but it was just like, this is their land. This is the language that they speak, and I respected that. I wasn't going to come over there and expect them to be able to understand me speaking English.
Yeah.
Something has changed.
Right. I think it's the political correctness. And
yes, I do too.
And the, you know, we're bad people. Right now, our government is we're bad people.
Right.
And there's a general feeling in a large chunk of the population, I'm not going to say a majority, but a large chunk of the population feels like the American culture is evil.
Yeah.
And they're just sitting there and they, oh, no, you should keep your Spanish roots. You should keep your Chinese roots, your mm-hmm. Korean roots, your Polish roots.
Right.
But for America to work, we all have to blend into this big hybrid thing.
I think that's what makes people, I think actually that whole mentality of keeping, you know, separate like that.
Makes it harder for those people to live the American dream.
Absolutely. I think it hurts them.
But it also,
I think, hurts us having this. When I was a kid and I was growing up, I lived in a community that probably had like 14 or 15 different ethnic groups in it. But we all spoke English, and we never thought about the Spanish family that lives over there or the Vietnamese family that lives over there.
Right, those are just your friends.
Those were just your friends. You didn't think about that. And I think you lose that whole sense of being one, and that one being Americans. Now what we have is we have the Spanish, the Koreans.
Yep.
We're not Americans anymore. I'm not even sure what I am anymore, because how do I fit in this if we're not, you know. It's just really, it's... it's kind of sad, and I agree. It has something to do, I believe you're right, you're onto something there with the political correctness thing. It's the whole thing about, okay, everybody's individually has to be so valued that we're never a community anymore. We're only individuals.
Right.
And those individuals, and you have groups of like individuals. You don't have, who are the Americans anymore?
Right. Our culture of accepting and blending everything together is fading away.
Right. It's that whole America the Great Melting Pot no more. We don't
right.
melt.
We're no, when was the last time you heard somebody refer to us as the Great Melting Pot?
Yeah, not for a long time.
Not for a long time.
And you can sort of see that. We don't melt together. We don't take all these cultures and blend it into America. That's what made America great, was all these different cultures came together and blended together to make the American culture. Now we don't have that anymore. Now we just have, you know, these separate but equal cultures out there, and I think it
and that hurts us.
Oh, I think it does too, and I think it bleeds into racial issues, it bleeds into cultural issues, and everything. But that was that really struck out to me, was that this whole family was conversing in Korean. There was like 12 of them there, from the youngest ones all the way up to the oldest ones, and it's like, now I'm cool with you carrying that culture to your kids, but like at some point you got to become American, and I hate to say this, people got to learn this. America is English; it's an English speaking nation.
So let me ask a question, because my grandmother used to do this, and my grandmother used to bust people doing this. Sometimes when she was out with her friends. Right, and like her German friends and stuff, mm-hmm. and they were in tiny restaurants, they would speak in German so that other people wouldn't hear their conversations. You know, they're probably right. plotting world destruction. You know,
right.
No, I don't know what they, you know, I don't always know what they were talking about.
Yeah, it's like speaking in a secret code.
Right, and mm-hmm. I remember being out on the New York subway with my grandmother, mm-hmm. and the couple in front of us were talking in German. And, you know, there was like a younger couple and they were talking in German and they'd said something, you know, it was New York subway. It was jam packed and they'd said something about, you know, these damn New Yorkers or something like that. My grandmother like tore them up in German.
Yeah.
You know, and they turned around and looked and she says, you got to understand that just because I'm speaking English to my grandson doesn't mean I don't speak German.
Right. And I would imagine that. And
they were tourists.
In New York, I imagine that's probably pretty commonplace. People are talking in a foreign tongue thinking that they're...
Right. It's like an anonymity. It's like when I talk New York here in Virginia, or they talk Virginia to me. It's
right.
like, whoa, wait.
Right.
But I'm with you. I don't know if it's a rant as much as it's a poor outcry on what's happening with our country.
Right. All right, well, when we get back from this break, I'm going to do the story that I wanted to do last week because I was on sort of a terrorism thing. I was on a terrorism kick. And this one blends right into that, but it's got a sort of an interesting twist at the end of it. So all I can say is it's sort of a Breaking Bad story.
I like Breaking Bad. Great show. You know, speaking of great shows in mm-hmm. Japanese and Chinese, and we were talking about grandmother's German... Netflix has a show, The Man in High Castle. If you don't watch that, I have no use for you.
I still haven't seen it yet.
I didn't mean that. I meant the listeners. I don't have any use for you anyways.
Right.
But it's a great show. I normally don't promote other shows, things like that, but it's so phenomenal.
You're totally hooked.
I'm totally hooked.
All right.
And I binge watched it.
I'm going to probably binge watch it next week.
That sucks. That sucks. Right. Don't do it. Fight the power.
Okay, as I mentioned, I had done a couple stories last week that were sort of terrorism related, which obviously is very much in the news these days with what happened in Paris and what took place out in California.
And maybe what's going on today in Los Angeles.
Yeah, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, that's all kind of really weird.
It's kind of weird because they got all the schools in Los Angeles County shut down because of a bomb threat.
Yeah.
And which I don't quite understand. And now I guess... The last news I heard about that, by the way, Phil, was that they're under big attack now. The school system are closing all the schools based on an unconfirmed bomb threat. Because we had bomb scares.
Oh, yeah, all the time. I mean, that's how you avoided tests.
Right. I don't remember, you know, it was they might close a school down or let us go early for something like that.
Well, I think they thought it was such it was a credible one, but there wasn't details to say like what school.
Yeah, but I think there actually there's argument that now was not credible.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyway, okay. So, this story here, the name of the show is You Heard It Here, but this story, I'll bet you didn't hear it here first.
Okay.
Okay. Because this story has been making the rounds on the internet big time, and at least it was last week. And I'll explain towards the end why you probably won't be seeing too much more of it. But the story starts with the concept that the underworld is more interested in stopping terrorism than the president of the United States. But I would have to agree it's probably almost anybody more interested in stopping terrorism than the president of the United States.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure terrorists
he just wants
are
to
more
die.
Interested yeah. in stopping terrorism yeah. than that guy.
So there was a big story some months ago when the drug lord, the Mexican drug lord, El Chapo, escaped from prison through a tunnel and all
Chapo.
That stuff.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right.
He did it on a motorcycle, I believe, right?
In the tunnel. Did. That's right.
Yes.
Yep. And El Chapo's got a lot of enemies. He's, the Mexican government, obviously, although I think he's got them beat pretty good. The DEA is a big one. And apparently even Donald Trump doesn't like him very much because Donald Trump doesn't want him coming in the country. So, okay. Period. But the world's most powerful drug trafficker is now going to take on the world's most feared organization, ISIS, since Obama won't. Let me continue. That's a sigh of well, I'm not sure, but I
well, you know, okay. Before you continue, I'm just going to say a couple things. Every couple months, you always hear how anonymous hacker is going after ISIS accounts. Mm-hmm. And then it's funny. I was, after I binge watched The Man in High Castle, free plug there. I'm rewatching The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since I watched that, so yeah. Rewatching that, and I'm at the point where I remember Christopher mm-hmm. had those friends who were Muslim or Iranian or whatever, that's how they say it on the show. I don't know what they were.
Right.
And they're kind of like turning them in because of the whole ports problem, the problem at the ports and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, the mob doesn't want to get involved in terrorism and stuff. Sometimes terrorism's bad for business.
Oh, there's no question about it. In fact, this story actually goes to that. Apparently, El Chapo's anger towards ISIS does not actually stem from the attacks in Paris or San Bernardino, but instead from concerns on his bottom line after ISIS destroyed several of his Sinaloa cartel's drug shipments that were moving through the Middle East. And
you don't play that.
Yes, you don't mess with El Chapo's wallet.
No.
Right?
You don't. El Chapo got duckies.
That's right.
You don't mess with the duckies.
That's right. So in a harshly worded email to ISIS, which was...
Did they have like, is it like ISIS.com?
Yeah, I don't know. Which was leaked by the website Cartel Blog. Guzman sent a stark warning to ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi about messing with the cartel's business. First of all, the Mexican drug cartels have the leader of ISIS's email address.
Well, I mean,
and we can't even figure out how to send a smart bomb up his ass, and they have his email address.
Well, I'm sure they have that. Didn't you see the movie Minions where they have like the crime convention down in Florida?
Right, yes.
Right. I mean, I'm sure everybody goes down there. It's a 3-day weekend at some international convention center. They exchange emails and stuff like that. ISIS deals a lot of drugs. Afghanistan, their war against Russia was funded by poppy.
That's true. That's true.
And I don't mean the guy on the Red Sox. I mean the little stuff you cry.
So here's a little bit out of the email that he sent to
the
leader. Yeah. You, ISIS, are not soldiers. You are nothing but lowly pee, and you fill in the rest of it in there. Your God cannot save you from the true terror that my men will levy on you if you continue to impact my operation. He added, my men will destroy you. The world is not yours to dictate. I pity the next son of a whore that tries to interfere with the business of the Sinaloa cartel. I will have their heart and tongue torn from them. It looks like it's on.
Here's what I'm saying. If our government was smart, mm-hmm. this is the kind of stuff we'd be pushing. Like I would be, I'd be sending smart bombs to blow up drug cartel stuff, and then turn around and call the cartel up and be like, "Hey, by the way, that was terrorism. That wasn't us."
That's right.
And I'd be like dropping porn with like a return label and like, you know, bacon and marijuana and stuff like that. Over in like Afghanistan and stuff, that, and, oh, and you made me Syria, and be like, yeah, oh no, that wasn't us. That must have been the cartels trying to expand their business.
I'm going
to
get off course for just a real quick second because my sister told me a story about someone who actually attached a pig's head, like from a butcher shop, a pig's head to a mosque in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
that's Philadelphia. They're good for that kind of stuff.
I'm surprised it's taken this long.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, Philly, you know, I'm also surprised nobody went there and been like, where the pig feet?
Right.
But I think sometimes, you know how they always say, the enemy of my enemy is my friend?
Yes.
Okay, what we really should be doing is the friend of my enemy can be my enemy's enemy.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like
that's deep, Phil.
You always have the best way to win a fight, and I actually have proof in my own neighborhood. I've won a battle with a neighbor based on the fact that I never even fought. He started with me. My other neighbor jumps in. My other people in my neighborhood jumped in, and the whole argument, and I end up looking like a good guy, but I got everything I wanted out of it.
Sure.
Why not pit the mob against the cartels?
Absolutely.
Why stop these guys?
Right, right.
You know,
right.
Hey.
Right. I mean, I think you're better off if you're fighting an organization that does not have any rules.
Right.
That right? They don't.
So
they,
let another organization with no rules fight them.
Exactly.
Stay out of it.
Right, exactly.
You know, here what are you going to do? Well, we're going to let El Chapo acquire a battleship. If he goes off these areas, we'll sink it. We'll give him get an older one, you know. If he goes over there to fight those guys, hey, right, might refuel it for him.
Right, there you go.
Yeah, you know, I'm not opposed to that.
So the Sinaloa cartel is considered the world's largest drug trafficking organization with operations running throughout the Americas, Europe, Africa, Australia, and Asia. In the Middle East, the cartel has become a major provider of cocaine, ecstasy, and other so-called party drugs to oil-rich princes and businessmen throughout the region. Islamic State fighters, however, abhor the use of drugs and have systemically been destroying any cartel shipments they can get their hands on.
You know, can we time out there? If that's true, then why do they talk about all the guys that are high fighting in the jihad that they're so wired up on, like LSD or something, that they don't feel it when you shoot them?
I don't know.
You know, we're against the drugs unless we're selling them
fine. Selling them's fine.
Okay.
So they destroy cartel shipments because they don't do that? I mean, apparently, these guys have never seen Breaking Bad.
No.
And Breaking Bad. What happens when you mess with the cartel shipments at Breaking Bad?
They put your head on a turtle.
that's exactly right. They put your head on a turtle.
They put your head on a turtle.
Right.
And that's serious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but yeah, I don't. I would love to see this happen. I'd love to see them battle it out.
Right. While the group is prolific on social media and in their video production, ISIS has so far not responded to the threats from Guzman. Maybe they thought it was Mexican spam, you know?
Mm.
What is?
Sorry. Spam mail.
Yeah. In his email, Guzman also hints that if he succeeds in destroying the terrorist group, that he should be given immunity from prosecution. Not opposed to that. El Chapo made a highly publicized escape earlier this year, which we talked about before, from a so-called maximum security prison in Mexico, where he was awaiting trial on drug trafficking charges. I'd definitely give this guy immunity. They can't catch him anyway, so you might as well give him immunity. And when they catch him,
give him something to fight for.
Anyway, he definitely seems up to the task. I'd give him the keys to a U.S. destroyer like we talked about. Say, have at it. But here's the thing. The whole story's a hoax.
I figured that.
Yeah.
It sounded too good to when they emailed him, you know.
The funniest thing about this whole story is that a guy put it up on his blog, wrote the story just like that, and it got picked up by news agencies all over the world and put out, including Fox News, as being a true story. They didn't know. Yeah. And he, it's funny because the guy that put it up there said he didn't think anybody would actually believe this, let alone go out and distribute it. And all these major news organizations went out and distributed it.
Yeah, but how many times does that happen? A lot, though.
Off a blog, not as much. I mean, off, yes, that's true. But you don't go read, first of all, reading a blog, believing anything you read in a blog, since I write one, and I know, okay, you can't believe anything. Yeah, because it's mostly opinion and sometimes fantasy. But this thing just absolutely took over the internet. It started showing up on major news sites, and then everybody else was then sending it out too. It was all over Twitter. It was all over Facebook.
Yeah, I saw it. Yes. It made the rounds through and everything. I love a good hoax story. Yeah. I love the possibility of that.
Yeah.
I think that if we're not trying to make that happen, we're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Like, what would have been the best outcome in World War II, maybe finding a way to turn the Germans against the Japanese.
Yeah.
Look how many thousands of lives would have been saved.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
You know, listen, we let the Russians fight a big brunt against the Germans and stuff, you know. Mm. I'm not opposed to making enemies fight, you know.
Right.
I'm okay with that. I think sometimes there's a good reason for that.
Yeah. So we're going to head out to a break, and when we come back, Phil's going to tell us something. What are you going to talk about?
I got a couple different things. Mm-hmm. You know, last week I wanted to talk some politics because there was this post about Carson saying, you know, if the Republican party was going to force Trump or come out against Trump, he would go third party and stuff. So I want to talk a little bit about not so much that, but maybe political strategies or my mm-hmm. thoughts on it.
Okay.
And some of the things I see happening and some of the misnomers I think are out there. And then I got a couple little tidbits things that might be kind of interesting. Okay. Especially at the end, I'm going to talk about a little Christmas Eve surprise. And we're back here on You Heard It Here on ntnradio.com. I don't know if we said that before.
I don't think we did because we're just very bad at that.
We are. There should be a big note on the sign of the studio that says, say that.
Yeah. So if you pick it up, you go there and there's other content and stuff. And you can see all our other episodes if you're just listening to this one.
Yeah. So, you know, I like politics and there's a lot going on and stuff. And, you know,
It's a magical time, isn't it?
It's a magical time.
There's nothing like a presidential election to really stir the pot, isn't there?
Yeah, and here in the D.C. area, I think you get it much earlier than we did in New York.
Oh, perhaps.
You know, and it feels earlier. And
I think
stuff.
I think the thing is, I think in the Washington area, people care about it much earlier. And my guess is there's more important stuff in Long Island.
Yeah,
this,
you know,
right?
I mean, yeah, like, where are you going to get your egg sandwich? Exactly. Who has better pizza?
Right, exactly.
You know, good heartfelt questions. So I like paying attention, and I mean, I'll tell the listeners, and I try not to, I'm sure you can guess by the things, I'm pretty much what I call a constitutional conservative.
Okay.
I don't really care about gay rights. I don't really care about, you know, like, I don't care about a bunch of issues
What does that mean when you say you don't care about it?
It's like, it's not in the Constitution to me. That's a states' rights issue.
Well, so then you do care.
I mean, I do care, but, you know, it's
right,
not,
you're saying it's something the federal government has no business
right,
being
like,
involved in.
But, like, I'm not like one of those people who are like, oh, my God, I'm so far over here. Everything's got to be cut and dry this way. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely fiscal conservative. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you got to have... You have to have your bank account taken care of before you can worry about what color dress you buy. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So just to throw that out, because some of that's going to come out in this next conversation. But right now, the Republican Party has 40,005 people running for president. And it's getting smaller. It's down from like 100,000. Right. But there's still too many people.
That is definitely true.
And I know being here in by the Beltway, as they call it, you hear a bunch in the news is all these the Republican National Party is, you know, panicked about Trump winning I'm panicked about Trump winning.
Mm-hmm.
And all these outsiders are dominating and stuff like that. And I've always taken the approach that I'm not going to worry about that right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my guy for a while, the guy who I would like to be president wasn't doing well.
Mm-hmm.
He's starting to rebound and come on. And I think the more he talks, I think the more people realize that this guy has really good ideas. But last week when we were sitting down to the show last Friday, there was a thing online about Carson saying, you know, if the Republican Party tries to sabotage Trump, he would look third party too and hope Trump would and stuff,
uh-huh.
right? Because of an article in the Washington Post, which is barely news. You know, I mean, that's definitely...
Well, yeah, I was going to say the Washington
Post is definitely an opinion paper.
Yes.
You know, and I was looking at that, but if the Republican Party did that, they're idiots. Because Trump has all the people that like him are liking him now.
Mm-hmm.
He's never going to get more than what's out there now. His 24%
is what
is
it. Right.
You know, and
he's,
I think
he's not converting people over.
Right. He's not converting people over, and he won't ever convert people over. If you don't like Trump,
mm-hmm.
then if your candidate drops out, you're not going to go to Trump. Like, I think Ted Cruz is gaining momentum because as these other guys towards the back of the field are dropping out, their voters are going towards Cruz, and I think Rubio's another one who's gaining some momentum from that.
Uh-huh.
You know, and to me, if the Republican Party did that, that's a big screw-up. That's something the press that hates the Republican Party, mm-hmm. A.K.A. the Washington Post, right. MSNBC,
sure.
can use as an advantage, can use as a story to keep that image of Republicans are bad people. Look, they're plotting against their own.
Yeah.
They're trying to do that. Number one, that's a bad idea because if I'm not in politics and I'm smart enough to know that Trump has peaked and it's only down for him,
uh-huh.
how come they don't? Why are they so panicked about it? They can't be looking at 31% saying, oh, or as his highest peak, he was 31%. Mm-hmm. Now I think it's 24
right.
or 22.
Mm-hmm.
They can't be sitting there going, oh my God, he's a threat. And be panicked over it before the first caucus.
I'll tell you why they're worried. I'll give you the reason why they're worried. What they're worried about is, even though I think it's a long shot, and I think you think it's a non-shot, is what they're worried about is that Trump pulls off... Iowa almost doesn't matter. People don't realize how insignificant Iowa is. They like to consider themselves really, really, really important. You got to remember, there was a Pennsylvania senator who won Iowa last time in the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Rick Santorum, right? Where did that lead? He didn't become the nominee. Iowa is not a very good predictor about who's going to be a president in the United States. New Hampshire is much more, but the thing about it is that because New Hampshire, for a New England state in general, their voting populace in the Republican primary is a lot closer to the mainstream of the country than, say, Iowa's are, well, which are much more evangelical, okay,
right.
in Iowa.
Well, in Iowa, what I think the early caucuses do is it gets rid of those guys who have 2% right now.
This I'll tell you what, I think this election cycle, that's not going to happen.
You don't think so?
No. To me, the fact that you've got guys in there right now that are less than 1% that are staying in for no purpose at all. It's not like they're fighting for a vice presidency or,
See, I figured by South Carolina, right? That's the third one.
Yeah, but you realize...
I figured by South Carolina, most of those
South
guys
Carolina's
would be
senator is getting clobbered in his own home state right now, and he's still staying in the race.
Well,
Lindsey Graham is pulling
They're still
like
getting
two-
donations. They stay until the donations stop. I don't think Iowa is important.
I can't imagine anybody is donating to Lindsey Graham right now. That's like...
There's got to be some drunk. I'm tempted to donate to Lindsey Graham because he's like, I think we all need to sit down and drink more.
Yeah. You might as well just dump your cash into a wood chipper because he has no chance of... He's not even a speck on the radar right now. And these people are hanging in there. The person who got out quick and smart was Walker. Walker saw the trend and saw that it wasn't working for him. So rather than just toss a bunch of money away, he said, I'll get out because I can use this money to pay off those bills.
Right, and there's also
Graham's
future.
Not going to have enough money to come
he's
in.
He's young enough that there's future possibilities.
Right, right, right. So, but there's a bunch of people out there. But here's what the RNC is worried about. The RNC is worried about the possibility. It's close now to the Iowa caucus. It's the first week of February.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're like 48 days out. Something like that now, I believe, to Iowa.
No, it's something like that.
Yeah. And so they're worried that what's going to happen is if he squeaks out any kind of win, he's way ahead in New Hampshire. There's a really good chance he's going to win in New Hampshire. He's way ahead in New Hampshire. But bear with me for a second.
Okay. All right.
So they're worried that if he squeaks out a win in Iowa and he wins in New Hampshire, and he's way ahead in South Carolina, by the way, they're afraid that what he's going to have behind him is this air of inevitability at that point, because he'll have this momentum, which momentum has proven that's really what makes a big difference. And if people do decide, my guy's not going to win, people tend to want to go with a winner, as crazy as the idea of a Trump nominee would be. And the RNC is just worried that it could possibly happen. And that's why I think they're so worried about.
Yeah. I mean, first, the RNC needs a lot better dirt diggers. You know, I don't understand. All the time I hear people, and a lot of people that are currently Trump supporters,
mm-hmm.
talking about, oh, you know, I remember one of the things they said about Mitt Romney was, well, you know, I mean, Mitt Romney was like almost a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
15 months ago, Trump was.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and right. It's like, you know, people, Reagan was, but his come to Jesus moment wasn't his presidential run.
Yeah, and I think Trump supporters don't care.
They don't. And, no. I don't think somebody like, okay, if the person that I'm want to win
mm-hmm.
or would like to see run,
mm-hmm.
you know, if he's pushed out, I'm not going to Trump. Mm-hmm. I'd pretty much vote for my shoe before Trump
mm-hmm.
in any caucus. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Trump looks like he has this huge lead because he has 30%, but there's so many people with 8% and 6%
mm-hmm.
that all it takes is a couple of them to fall out and Trump no longer has a lead. Like, I wouldn't panic. This is not the panic time. The panic time is if we're April.
Yes. No, I don't think they're panicked. Well, it's too late in April. In fact, I'll tell you, after Super Tuesday, it's too late. It's done. They've screwed themselves up by creating this process where the first third of the primaries make the decision for the rest of the country.
Right.
You know, it's like Iowa being the first event in the season is ridiculous. It's that, you know, that made a difference when Iowa's, you know, 70 years, 80 years ago, when Iowa's had no effect on the presidential election at all, and they became the first caucus and became the first event in the election series, because otherwise they were meaningless. Well, guess what? They're even more meaningless now, because they don't really decide anything, but by making them the first in the nation, like New Hampshire says, we're the first in the nation primary, and Iowa is the first in the nation caucus. And the deal they have with both the RNC and the DNC is nobody's going to mess with that, because we don't want to lose that. They threaten, in fact, if you do that. They keep moving them up. Remember we had a problem? People were moving
them up. Yeah, well, Florida a couple years ago, right?
Right. So, they're worried about momentum. And the other problem is, it's not that they're worried about, they're more worried that Trump's going to lose the Senate and the House for him than they are about the presidency. I'll be totally honest with you.
Yeah, I can see
they're worried he's going to roll right down the ticket, destroy the ticket altogether.
And I can see that.
And that's what the Congress is worried about, too. They're afraid they're going to lose their seats if Trump's the nominee. And I'll be totally honest with you, there's a real good chance of that.
I still don't think Trump pulls it off. I'm one of those conspiracy people.
I agree with you. I don't think he gets the nomination.
Well,
anyway.
Not so much the nomination, but even if he gets the nomination, I think he tanks his run. I think somewhere along the line, Trump tanks himself intentionally.
Well, I don't know that I agree with that, but I don't think he'll get the nomination in the first place. I really don't think so. I think people will come to their senses.
I hope.
People come to their senses. At some point, people are going to say, you know what? He's never answered a single question.
He hasn't. Right. That's what's so frustrating about he's using the Obama way to win the election. Oh, mm-hmm. hope and change. Mm-hmm. Never told us what hope and change was.
No, I mean, I'd be perfectly fine with Trump as the Secretary of the Treasury, but that's it. That's it.
Yeah. You know, I'd be okay with
guy
that.
Guy knows the banking system.
He knows the banking system.
Right, yeah. Other than that, you know, or the Social Security Administration. I mean, or the IRS administrator. But he's not answering any questions. I don't think. You know what Trump's doing? Trump's doing. He's running a brilliant race. I'm going to say the most outrageous things possible.
Well, that's why I think part of me says, is he just out there having good time because he lost his TV show and this puts him on TV?
Yeah, but he could have had his TV show if he didn't run. He only lost his TV show because he was going to run. Yeah. That was a choice that he made.
Well, I think his TV show might have been dying.
Well, I think he's bored. Well, then you got Arnold Schwarzenegger is now going to be the head of that show. I mean, imagine that.
Yeah, that
makes no sense at all, right?
That's nowhere near Trump.
Right, that's nowhere near Trump.
I
don't quite get that. You know, you don't think of Arnold Schwarzenegger as a business magnate. Trump, obviously, he's got
Trump.
Warren Buffett could do it, you know?
And Schwarzenegger's not going to be the arrogant doofus that Trump is.
They'll just all sit around the table and say, what did he say?
What? Was that English?
Yeah, really.
How did you become governor?
Yeah.
You
so know? I mean, I firmly believe it's... Here's the problem. The RNC doesn't want Cruz or Rubio. They want Jeb. That's
I don't know
who they
why.
Want.
I don't know why.
Because that's the way the old guard works. Who's next in line? And they believe that of the people that are out there right now, he would be the next logical in line. In my opinion, he's a sure loss.
He's just because they have so much Bush hate out there.
Oh yeah, yeah, and he, the guy's a miserable campaigner. You think that Romney was a bad campaigner and sat there and let people say things without bounds? Jeb's the worst.
Yeah, he's horrible.
He's Jeb's milk toast.
And they,
so,
need,
but
they,
that's who the RNC wants, and the reason they want that is the RNC is more interested in keeping the Senate and the House than they are about winning the presidency. I'll be totally honest with you about it. That keeps them in business.
Yeah.
As long as they have somebody to run against, and they will like having somebody to run against. Hillary would be a great ploy to run against, wouldn't she, if she was the president? That's what the RNC wants. That brings money in.
Right, that brings money in.
What happens if you have the presidency and the House and the Senate? You're not going to get nearly as much donations because what are people fighting against?
Right, and you also have to get stuff done.
Yeah.
Or else you get voted out.
You got no excuse. Yeah.
Like you got no excuse.
Yeah, like the first 2 years of Obama where you got nothing done.
Right. Yeah. No excuse.
Right.
And that hurts you.
Yeah, but I don't think Trump gets the nomination.
I hope not. I mean,
But at this point, my next pick would have been Carson, but I think the terrorism thing killed him, and he was not willing to come out and just be bombastic the way that Trump is. That got Trump through the terrorism thing.
Right.
Right? Keep the Muslims out of the country. Bomb them back to the Stone Age. Trump won't, I mean, Carson won't say those things, and so he just looks
Carson's
like a doctor.
Too nice of a guy.
He looks like a doctor now.
Right.
That's the problem.
He's too nice of a guy.
Right. Trump, and you know what the attraction to Trump is? I can tell you right now what it is. He's everything Obama is not. He's not politically correct.
I see all the I see all the similarities.
Oh, well,
you
policy-wise, you could think about that. I'm talking about the way he talks, okay? And the way he talks.
See, I think Trump is mimicking Obama.
Give me an example.
Because, well, you know, you go like, hey, Donald Trump, what are you going to do with the economy? Well, I'm going to fix it. I mean, Obama, all he ran on was, I'm going to fix it.
No,
I'm not going to be the same.
Obama's been out there saying it is fixed.
Right, no, but I mean, when he ran in 07.
Okay.
Right? He was, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to bring change. I'm going to fundamentally change America. I'm going to do this.
Well, that was his only word.
He never gave a plan. He never had a plan.
No.
He just wanted a job.
Right.
I think Trump realized that the best way to be the front runner in a election is to not piss anybody off. So don't give it any plans. Just say, I'll take care of it. Don't you worry. How many times, what are you going to do about terrorism? Well, I'll take care of the terrorists. They won't want to mess with me.
Yeah. But I watched a focus group the other day of Trump supporters on, I think it was on NBC.
I heard about that. Yes. I didn't watch it.
And the thing about it, if you listen to what they say, they're all saying that he's like the anti-Obama because Obama says we have ISIS on the run, and Trump says bomb the hell out of them, right? Obama says, yeah, the economy's doing better, unemployment's down to 5%. Trump says the country's an absolute mess. Well, the people in the country are thinking the country's an absolute mess. They're saying, why won't the commander-in-chief do something about ISIS? Trump's hitting all the, and that's what he's doing. It's brilliant. He's hitting all the buttons. He's pushing all those buttons out there with no detail.
Right.
He's just hitting.
And that's like what Obama did. We need health care. No detail.
We got a Muslim who came in the country, married a guy, and did a terrorist act, ban all Muslims. You know that there's a huge contingent of people out there who are saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are Trump supporters. Those are Trump supporters. So, I think that's what's working for him. The problem is they're going to wake up one day and they're going to say, you know what? He didn't really answer any questions.
No.
They're going to realize that. The problem is, who does that benefit? Cruz is either running the most brilliant race possible.
I like that. He's running a Reagan-style race because he's not attacking his people. He's attacking the Democrats.
You know who the second choice to Jeb is?
Rubio?
By the RNC. It's Rubio. They want Rubio because Rubio gets along real well with the... Rubio gets along well with the leadership in the Senate. And they hate Cruz. And he hates them.
Yeah.
So it's going to be kind of interesting.
That's kind of why I want Cruz. I will not lie.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want Cruz because I want smart people.
He is. I think he's a smart person. I think Rubio's a smart person,
too. I think Rubio's a smart person. You know, Rubio gets...
The smartest of all is Carson.
Ken will tell any listener who wants to email us, you can just do, you heard it here at ndnradio.com, and Ken will respond. I'm the type of person that when I'm mad at somebody, I nuke the bridge. Sometimes I'll drop 4 or 5 nukes on that. You know, like there's no repairing an argument I have with somebody. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like that's what Cruz kind of, like Rubio wishy-washes way too much. Rubio, I'm not for this. By the way, maybe I am for this. I'm not for this.
But I think that's why the RNC likes him.
I know, and I hate that.
Rubio's diplomatic.
I don't care if you're wrong. I don't care if you're wrong. Stick with your guns.
Well, I think that's why I think that Cruz is expecting he's going to get all of Trump support. Because he's being more Trumpian in the fact that I'll say whatever I want to say.
But I think he's also going to gain as some of the other people drop out.
I will tell you something. Rubio has got some... good talking points against Cruz, unfortunately. Very good ones.
Yeah, but I think Rubio suffers from... How do I say it? He kind of falls out of the spotlight too much. Cruz has changed his campaign to stay in the spotlight, even when he was on the outside.
I tell you, he's running the most brilliant fundraising campaign I've ever seen.
And press-wise,
yeah.
You know, 3 months ago, he was on the outside looking in at everything.
Yes.
And he's changed. Like, that's what I like about him is he was smart enough to say, man, what I'm doing isn't right. I'm going to change.
Yeah.
And he completely rebooted what he was doing.
He's got some things that I think are going to hurt him, though. He's been very non-conservative about military spending, and he's not been real friendly to intelligence organizations either, which I think those are things that could end up hurting him.
Yeah, you might be right on that, but we'll see. I just wanted to bring that up because I thought the whole Carson...
But I think that's where the battle gets down to for this thing. I think it's between Cruz and Rubio, which is amazing to me after just hiring a single term senator who was total failure. The likelihood is we're going to elect another one.
Right. You know, but at least it gets rid of the racism because that would be two Hispanic guys or Cubans or whatever.
Or Canadians.
Canadians. Well, who cares? Same thing. When we come back, we'll probably talk about other stuff. Ken, I do.
I actually haven't. We're going to talk a little bit Charlie Brown when we get back.
Charlie Brown. Well, I got some cartoon stuff, too.
Welcome back to You Heard It here on ndnradio.com.
That was a total.
It was so good, we thought we'd play it again.
I like that song so much. So much.
Oh, well. Anyway.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
So, Phil, did you know that Charlie Brown lived in a trailer park?
I did not know that.
Yeah. I didn't know that either, but I found out that he did, or at least he used to. He doesn't so much anymore. A former child actor who was the voice of Charlie Brown and all those Peanuts TV specials that we grew up with was sentenced to 5 years in prison last Monday for making criminal threats. Good grief.
Could you imagine being threatened by Charlie Brown?
I know, really. That's amazing. Peter Robbins, he's 59 years old. He pled guilty last month to sending threatening letters to a manager at a mobile home park in suburbia Oceanside, California, where he lived.
He also sent letters to members of the media in which he offered to pay money to have San Diego County Sheriff Bill Gore killed. Yeah, send them to the media. Send threat letters to the media. That you, and he
did somebody hack his email or something? No, please tell me.
When
that.
You plead guilty, the answer would be no. Prosecutors say he also threatened a San Diego judge, but that charge was not part of the plea agreement.
I'm Charlie Brown, damn it.
That's right. Pull that football.
I know the great pumpkin.
Robbins made numerous outbursts in earlier hearings before a judge, but he was relatively subdued at his sentencing. I think there wasn't much for him to win at that point since he pled guilty.
Wow.
According to the local San Diego Union Tribune paper, his attorney, Joey Super, who apparently is not so super, made a request on his client's behalf to withdraw his plea after he pled guilty. But William Chidsey Jr., who's a retired Los Angeles Superior Court judge, who was brought in to handle the case after the San Diego judges recused themselves since he threatened to have them killed, sentenced the form. He refused to allow him to withdraw his plea of guilty and sentenced him to 4 years and 8 months in prison. So, good grief, Charlie Brown.
I'm completely shocked.
You're a good man, Charlie Brown.
You're a good man, Charlie Brown. The Great Pumpkin loves you or something.
Yeah.
You know, I pulled up his wiki page because I was like, I wonder what else he did.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much he had no life other than like four Charlie Brown movies.
Yeah, that's pretty sad.
That's pretty sad. You know, I'd be angry too. If I was Charlie Brown and I was living in a trailer park, I'd be pissed too.
He probably didn't make much money either.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just voiceover work, which doesn't pay as much.
Certainly not back then for cartoons.
No,
I imagine it paid very little.
I got to imagine he got peanuts.
Yeah, that's right. let's be honest. The real star was Snoopy anyway.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, my neighbor, I actually helped my neighbor stake in his Snoopy on a red, you know, the Red Baron one with mm-hmm. the, like, Charlie Brown wasn't even in the song, which was, like, made Snoopy famous.
Yes,
money.
That's right. Yep.
He just got screwed on that.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Christmas stuff,
yeah.
Because Charlie Brown and Christmas, well, I thought that's where you were going.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of those famous
Charlie Brown Christmas is very famous. Christmas Eve,
mm-hmm.
we're getting a flyby. And there's a Christmas Eve asteroid
going
to pass like maybe less than 7 million miles from here. You know, and of course,
it's like in our backyard.
I mean, that's practically like Woodbridge. You know, I mean, from Manassas, Google it. You'll see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But it's a mile and a quarter long. It's a big sucker.
A mile and a quarter long. Okay.
But it's coming by and it's supposed to go by Christmas Eve. They said that you're not going to be able to see it naked eye. I wish you could because that'd be like the Star of David kind of thing. You know,
sure.
Or something like that. That'd be kind of cool. But
that would be sort of like, I don't think Star of David would be on Christmas Eve would be the right one, Phil.
Star of Bethlehem.
Star of Bethlehem.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Wow.
Star of David would have been a few weeks earlier.
Yeah, and that was there for 8 days.
That was there for 8 days.
Wow. I can't believe I just screwed that up. I can.
No one's going to ever accuse there being three wise men in the studio.
Yeah, that's
or
true.
Or even two.
Yeah, one.
Yeah.
I like the whole sci-fi and the end of earth things, you know, and of course mm-hmm. there's all these conspiracy people out there saying, oh, you know, that's bringing Jesus back, you know, like aliens ride on comets and all that kind of stuff. So
right.
There's all kinds of good stuff, and I just get a kick out of that. You know, I love
sci-fi stuff. I can't get enough of it.
I follow all these idiots on Twitter that are like, oh, the asteroid's coming and it's going to wipe us out on Christmas Day. And, you know, and then I saw some other guy that the Mayan calendar was wrong and it's really December 25th.
I mean, timing-wise, it's everything because doesn't like Star Wars come out this week?
Well, that's what I was thinking, like Star Wars mm-hmm. and then all those other movies that people go to watch while their kids are seeing Star Wars the second time around.
Right, yeah.
You know? So I just was like, I saw that and I was like, oh, yeah, I like a good comment. It works much better when we have the music up.
It does, but it came in kind of loud.
Yeah, I know. I didn't want to miss it like we did last week.
Yeah.
Although you didn't notice that because we did kind of change that.
I did get to do a story this week, but I'm going to give a little teaser for the next episode in there.
I'm
going to actually do a story about the new heavyweight champion of the world. A lot of people don't even know who he is. Let's see.
Boxing?
Boxing champion.
I couldn't tell you.
Tyson Fury is his name. And he's actually getting hacked up pretty good in the media right now.
Oh.
He's a born-again Christian, and they don't like him.
Oh, I apparently not.
They don't like him.
Apparently, if you love Jesus, you shouldn't beat people up for a living.
All right, so make sure you tune into the next episode to hear the story about Tyson Fury.